Count Floyd here. Time for another monster chiller horror theater.
Change has come to America.
The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
I've now been in 57 states.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
Hello! I'm Sharon Gilbert. Oh, welcome everybody to PID Radio.
We had such a frightening experience earlier this evening that we must share with you.
Scary stuff.
Good thing Sam was with us. He protected us.
Sam was totally nonplussed.
Totally nonplussed. He's not even sure what a plus is, but if he did, he would totally be non-it. It was while we were walking with Sam earlier this evening, and we turned a corner and suddenly encountered four baying hounds. Yes, the hounds of the Shelbyville. I'd like to take credit for that, but that was Sharon's.
Oh, gosh, they were the cutest little roly-poly beagles. They were so cute, and they were quite excited to see Sam.
Yeah. If you've ever heard a beagle howl, one of them howling.
They bay. Baying.
Yes. It's loud. When you get four of them together, it sounds like mayhem. It sounds like the apocalypse. Apocalypse has begun. So we turned the corner and suddenly four beagles all baying. It was something.
We tried to find really good beagle clips, but you know we just couldn't find any. We even looked at the Hound of the Baskervilles clips, couldn't find any. Yeah. So I had to settle on Count Floyd.
So,
which reminds us, we are going to link to a video that you all need to see if you've ever seen Sweeney Todd, and
yes,
you're a fan of Andy Griffith.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting mix there.
Sweeney
Todd,
leave it there.
Andy Griffith. Yeah, it's pretty much the same target demographic.
The link's in the show notes.
Yeah, it's PIDradio.com, and you'll find that. Just for your amusement, has, nothing really to do with the world at large. Apropos of nothing, as the song goes. So dive right into it. Once again, another interesting day out there. We see backlash against the murder of Dr. George Tiller in Kansas continuing to build.
Well, yeah. In fact, I saw some demonstrators, and one angry young woman was holding up a placard that essentially was calling for, you know, people to riot against and do harm to those fascist Christians.
Yeah. And now this murder is being denounced and rebuked by everybody from Planned Parenthood to Operation Rescue. I mean, that pretty much represents both ends of the spectrum on the killing of the preborn. But still, this is, as we predicted, going to prompt some on the pro-abort side to rationalize a retribution against those who profess to be
unenlightened Christians.
Yeah, right. So just keep your eyes out on that, because, again, there are more out there who are being a little more quiet. I mean, the ones who are being really vocal and carrying signs, you know who they are. It's ones who are working in the darkness and in the shadows that may do harm.
Not that we have reason to fear.
But as I was just going to point out, as Jesus said, you know, fear not them that can hurt the body, but cannot kill the soul. So that is our comfort. And that plus my next favorite verse, which is, he that is in you is greater than he that is in the world. So
amen.
Yeah. So so we don't have superpowers, but we have superpowers within us, which is kind of a interesting thing. Anyway, the president of the United States extending a friendly hand to the Muslim world, which is again kind of an interesting development. We've not seen a president openly courting relations with the Islamic world, perhaps as eagerly as President Obama is doing right now.
No, that's true. But I find it especially interesting that he has chosen Egypt for his major speech to the Muslim world. He looks so much like Akhenaten. I mean, is he going to have a little pharaoh hat on?
Possibly. It's you're, but it is.
I'm not kidding. He looks like Akhenaten. I know we've talked.
Others
about
have pointed that out, and there are some broad similarities. Yeah.
Yeah, there are. Well, anyway, he is trying to reach out to the Muslim world, and I've got a video that I posted to PID News today, and essentially the news. There's thunder afoot. the news outlet that produced the video makes a point that he has a Muslim father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Had, rather.
And
his father has passed on.
It is doubly interesting that he's chosen Egypt to do this, because Egypt is one of the strongholds of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is essentially the parent organization. And I'm not trying to imply or tie Barack Obama to the Muslim Brotherhood.
Oh, no, not
directly,
at all. No.
Not directly.
No, but he did choose Egypt, and Egypt has historic ties in the peace process with Israel as well.
Right.
He's going to Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and then up to Buchenwald, mm-hmm. Germany, and then over to France for the how many years is it since D-Day?
Since D-Day, it would be 64, I believe.
Yeah.
Was it, or was it 44 years? Maybe it was the 45th anniversary. 1944 was D-Day?
Yeah.
I wish I should know that, because that was one of the turning points, one of the most important dates in all of the 20th century. It was 1944, so it was 65 years ago, coming up on June 6th. So.
Which is the same day as the Prophecy Conference in Mansfield, Ohio.
That's right.
And if you haven't registered, make sure you do.
And do it quickly. You'll find a link to that information in the show notes and also at peeringintodarkness.com. Moving closer to home, the featured story at peeringintodarkness.com, PID News today, is a story from Pennsylvania, where the Bible has been banned from a kindergarten, which isn't necessarily surprising, except that it was a show and tell. It wasn't the teacher who was trying to introduce the Bible into the classroom. It was a parent at the request of her son.
Apparently the show and tell was supposed to be all about him. Mm-hmm. These are things that represent me. And he wanted his mother to read the Bible. And I guess some of the other parents complained.
Yep. And this went all the way to a U.S. appeals court, and the court ruled in favor of those who complained. The mother cannot read scripture during show and tell, even if the Bible is the boy's favorite book.
We were blessed when Nicole was in grade school. She got to not only take the Bible to school, she got to read it. Her teachers would say, sure, you know, if you just want to sit there and read the Bible, fine with me. Of course, the teacher wasn't reading from the Bible, but Nicole was allowed to take it, mm-hmm. read it to other students. They could have, you know, they could chat about it. We were so blessed by that school.
Right, yep.
And it was a public school.
But such is not the case in many of the public schools around the country. And apparently this particular school in suburban Philadelphia is one of those where even bringing the Bible into the classroom at the invitation of a student is not allowed anymore.
Well, you know what? We are going to lose freedoms as we get closer and closer to the return of Jesus Christ, and mm-hmm. we shouldn't be surprised by it. And I'm not so sure, honestly, that litigating is the answer. I think it brings it to the public eye when you do that,
mm-hmm.
but we're not going to turn back the clock.
No, prophecy tells us that this is to be expected. And Jesus warned us before he left. The world's going to hate you because mm-hmm. it hated me first.
Yeah, feel free to stand up for Christ, but you know, don't expect the world to just suddenly do a 180 and go, oh, we're so sorry, silly mm-hmm. us.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And this relates in a sense to some of the discussions over prophecy that we've had with those who hold different views of the timeline. There is a strain of thought out there that the rapture won't take place, that we are going to go through the tribulation period. And that may well be. That may well be. But I think along with that is a sense that we have not yet gone through the tribulation. And I think that there are Christians throughout history, say the Christians in the early days of the faith.
Well, let me just pause and make sure that listeners understand when you say we have not, you can't say that we haven't gone through the tribulation.
Mm-hmm.
We have gone through tribulation.
Well, and that's
but
my
not
point.
The tribulation.
Okay.
Which is the phrase you used just a second ago.
Oh, okay. Thank you for clarifying.
The tribulation is a 7-year period.
Right. when God pours out his judgment and wrath upon the earth.
Some say it's only 3.5 years. They say it's the second half. Mm-hmm. But at the very least, it's 3.5 years. But you're right. Christians are being persecuted all over the world.
Yeah, and have throughout history. When you go back to the first century A.D., up the first 3 centuries, really, after the death of Christ, or the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, I think that most Christians who were alive during that period of Roman persecution would argue that they were being tribulated.
Absolutely.
But anyway,
I feel little drops of rain. That's why I keep looking around. I think I'm just there. May be a cracked window or something.
That's odd.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Well, that would be we got the air conditioning fixed, so it's time for something else to else to come along. But you know, be that as it may, I mean the whole point comes back again to this idea that American Christians have right now. I think, and I know I do or have that we're supposed to be in a Christian nation, and therefore we sort of take for granted and almost take offense when the world steps in, as in this this court case in Philadelphia, and says, "No, you cannot do this. You cannot openly share your faith. You cannot even openly demonstrate or tell others about your faith." And really, for the majority of recorded history, at least since the majority of the last 2,000 years, true Bible believing Christians have been persecuted.
That's true.
So,
well, at least now we are still free to make the statements you and I are on this radio program. We are free to litigate in the courts if we choose to do so. There are many in other countries who don't have those freedoms.
Right.
There's a story from Voice of the Martyrs News today talking about the Hindus. There's a Hindu fringe group. If you hear Sam in the background, it's thundering outside. He's never happy about it. There's a Hindu fringe group that is threatening to bomb every Christian home if within 1 month the government does not crack down on them. I'm going to the story here. The leader of the Hindu extremist group, Nepal Defense Fund, the NDF, has threatened to bomb the homes of all Christians if they do not stop spreading the gospel within 1 month.
Well,
now, there have already been bombings and attacks upon Christians, not only in Nepal, but also in India and many other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I think, just one of the signs that we're getting close.
Sharon has done a wonderful job of putting together a really informative and targeted news portal at peeringintodarkness.com. And one of the feeds that you found, which is featured there on the front page, is the news feed from Voice of the Martyrs.
Oh, that's right. That's right. There's some amazing sites out there. And it occurred to me the other day, and I feel terrible that I hadn't already put these feeds on there, but there are stories coming from all parts of the world that explain what's going on specifically to Christians, and Voice of the Martyrs is one of them.
Yeah. It is. It does feel as though that things are moving more quickly, and that we're coming toward that.
It really does.
That event horizon. A couple of other notes as we look at again trends leading toward a one-world government. More noise that as the dollar is beginning to decline again, the dollar had really shown some surprising strength considering the really lousy United States economy over the last year. But the dollar itself had done well in currency trading around the globe, and it is essentially the world's reserve currency. It is essentially what backs everything.
Except hasn't Iran has backed out of it? Russia has backed out of it.
Well, Russia really hasn't, but that's the point. They're making noise now that they want to dump the dollar as its reserve currency. It's sort of the currency that is like a universal language for business deals. The dollar now has dropped below 1.43 euros for the first time this year. It's weakening again. Investors are getting nervous that the huge debt load that the U.S. is taking on is going to undermine the dollar.
Oh, that explains the rally at the Dow Jones.
Well,
it's the strangest little sucker rally.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that. But just to finish up very quickly, Russia is talking about a new global currency. Not just dumping the dollar as a reserve currency, but replacing it with a new global currency.
But they've been talking about that for the last 3 years.
Yeah. So we'll see. As the value of the dollar declines, more nations may be motivated to listen to that kind of talk. When the dollar is strong, there's not much point in listening to it. But if the dollar is weak and dropping, so that the value of those reserves being held by other nations is declining, well, then it's not in their best interest to hang on to those dollars. Now, the rally in the Dow Jones. I was looking at this yesterday and trying to figure out why the Dow was going up when we were hearing from President Obama how the United States government was going to take over General Motors. Until I read a little side note, you know, sort of buried in beneath all the news of how GM is going to be leaner and meaner and produce all these green energy efficient cars we're all going to want to buy, that General Motors had just been kicked off the Dow.
Mm-hmm.
The Dow Jones Industrial
Average.
They were
replaced by Cisco.
Yeah. And Citigroup was also also kicked off the Dow.
Oh.
So there you've got two of the companies that have been juggernauts of the United States industrial and financial sectors for years that have been delisted by the Dow Jones Industrial Average, mm-hmm, and replaced by Cisco and another company whose name is escaping me now. But this goes on all the time. My point is that this is not an isolated incident. When you look at the historic trend of the Dow Jones over the last 50 years, remember that those aren't the same 30 companies, and this is not a basket of a broad range of companies like the Standard & Poor's 500. The Dow Jones is an index based on 30 companies, and it was pointed out to me by a fellow I used to interview on the radio in Columbia pretty regularly about investing, that General Motors having a good day could alone account for an uptick in the Dow Jones. So when you get something happening like this, a company that is on the skids, a company that is failing, it doesn't drag the whole index down with it, because once they determine that the company's being given last rites, figuratively, they just kick it out of the index and replace it with a healthier company, so that the index never is really dragged down.
You know, this whole thing reminds me of a house that has a termite infestation.
Mm-hmm.
You may not know it for years,
mm-hmm,
until one day one of your joists collapse.
Right. And the reason you don't know it is because every time you start seeing those telltale little holes that appear in the paint or the wallpaper where the termites stick their heads out and then, you know, retreat away from the sun, you just slap up another coat of paint or put up another piece of drywall, mm-hmm, you know, another piece of wallpaper to cover up those little
exactly
holes.
You're ignoring the signs. They're there.
Right. Yeah. And
but these signs have been going on for decades.
Yeah. General Motors has been faltering and plotting and really staggering for a while. So is Chrysler. What's really frightening, and this is where we just go off into bizarro world, and pardon me for just some purely political rant here for just a minute or two.
Carry on.
The young man who is now the, and I say young man because he's, I think, slightly younger than me, maybe the same age, Barack Obama, is now effectively the chief executive officer of the largest automotive company, automaker, mortgage lender, and financial institution in the world. And he's never held an executive position in his life. He's never held a business position in his life. What's even more frightening is that, according to a couple of news articles that have popped up in the last couple of days, the man on his staff who is his principal advisor on how to restructure the auto industry is a 31-year-old kid who graduated from college with a degree in political science. Now, he may well be a very bright young man. He probably is. But he graduated from a degree in poli-sci, immediately went to work for a think tank as a political analyst, was Hillary Clinton's chief economic advisor during her campaign, and has never set foot inside an auto plant, or at least didn't until they started talking about how to nationalize the auto industry. This kid essentially has been in politics since day one after graduation. He's never worked in the real world. And he, apparently, according to inside sources at the White House, has been the most influential voice in guiding Barack Obama on how to nationalize the auto industry.
Okay, so let me just picture this. Let's put it this way. Let's say I study medicine for 4 years, And then I study all about surgery for another 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm top of my class in the book. And then I decide I'm going to operate on you. Mm-hmm. But I've never held a scalpel before.
Yep. Yep. That's
hey, look,
it.
Theoretically, I'm really good at it. I'm top of the game. But I've never, ever cut.
On a human. Before.
Exactly.
Right. That's essentially what's going on here. This young man, whose name is Stephen. No, I'm sorry. I've lost it here. Had it right in front of me, but now I lost it. Anyway, this 31-year-old young man, according to the New York Times, is working his first government job ever. And essentially, he's found himself crafting the policy for the United States government and how to run General Motors and Chrysler.
You know, it reminds me back in that. Yes, Sam, I know. I agree with you. It reminds me of back in the 90s, late 90s, when the dot-coms were all the rage.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids in Wall Street kept saying, no, 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 this isn't your dad's Wall Street. This isn't your grandpa's Dow. It's different now. We take these measurements differently.
Yeah.
These things are safe. Trust me on this.
You don't actually have to have a store. You don't actually have to be selling anything to
exactly.
make money.
Exactly. You don't have to have any kind of a business model. You just need to have people who are buying your stock.
Yeah. And, well, that's kind of the, it's sort well, it's like the slackers have taken over the government. Dude, where's our cars? So anyway, enough of the partisan.
Gosh.
You know, purely political rant. It's just we've gone into bizarro world, and there's no looking back.
Well, total left turn. The World Health Organization Director General Margaret Chan has been meeting for hours and hours and hours the last couple of days with her colleagues and other advisors, and they're trying to figure out how to declare a pandemic, which is technically what we have for H1N1, without scaring the world.
We don't want pandemic panic.
So apparently in the next 10 days, they plan on actually declaring a pandemic, which we've been in for weeks, according to the definition that WHO established a couple of years ago. we'll see what happens.
When was the last time the World Health Organization actually declared an official pandemic?
41 years ago, something like that.
So late 60s.
Yeah.
The Hong Kong flu?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Just about the length of a generation.
Well, how about that? How biblical.
How interesting. we're going to do something a little different to close out the program this evening.
We're already at 22 minutes.
All right. Well, we'll hold it off later. We were going to perhaps put a little clip of the audio.
Well, you can do that. Make it slightly longer. It's up to you. We'll just make some of the, you know.
Even happier.
Or more miserable.
Or more miserable. Well, I'll make it a brief clip. Anyway, we'll just feature a brief clip from the audiobook version of The God Conspiracy, which goes live at podiobooks.com next Monday. So a little clip of that before we close out with the theme music tonight. And Sam howls us off into the evening as we watch for the severe thunderstorms and all that other fun stuff. Our email, if you've got comments or questions, is radio@peeringintodarkness.com. And, of course, the link to the Piercing the Darkness forum is right there in the show notes at PIDradio.com.
And as we always say, you can join us at Twitter, twitter.com/PIDradio. And Facebook is where I am, and Derek's there, and we even have a PID Radio page.
Yes.
If you ever want to look for that. We have had many people following us, clicking to follow on Twitter and joining us at Facebook. And I got an email from one today, Manuel, you just followed, just joined me at Facebook, and you said you're happy that we're back on, but you kind of missed the old days. If you're talking about the interviews, let me give you a little teaser. Derek's planning on doing his own interview show.
Yes, we'll have details on that in
we'll
days to come.
We'll be giving you that.
Yes, so we can, you know, have the floor wax and the dessert topping all in one spot. Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
The God Conspiracy by Derek P. Gilbert. Read by the author. Like most modern supermarkets, Grandy's Foods was a low, wide building of brick and glass. It dominated a corner of one of the busiest intersections in southwestern St. Louis County, anchoring the strip mall it shared with two sit-down restaurants, two sandwich shops, a takeout pizza place, a dry cleaner's, a tax accountant, a hairstyling academy, a nail salon, and a dentist office. On a typical Friday afternoon, the store would be filled with shoppers loading up for the weekend. Families picking up milk, bread, and video rentals, and singles stocking up on beer, frozen pizzas, and bags of chips.
Now, the lot was clear, except for a dozen police cars, three fire trucks, and a couple dozen vehicles belonging to the people who got caught shopping in the wrong place at the wrong time. Eunice was out of the car before the engine shut down completely. He and Hopkins quickly identified the officer in charge, a captain with the St. Louis County Police Department. It was the county's jurisdiction, since the tiny village of Twin Oaks, which encompassed the strip mall and not much more, didn't have a police force of its own. The captain, Warner, according to his badge, stood behind a barricade of patrol cars arranged in a semicircle that faced the front of the store. He was about Joe's height, 6'2", but probably 20 pounds lighter. With his dark brown hair cropped close and a bristling mustache, Captain Warner resembled a younger Mike Ditka. "Captain, Special Agent Joe Eunice. This is Special Agent Mark Hopkins, St. Louis Field Office." Eunice extended his hand to Warner, who gripped it firmly. "What's the situation?" "Male Caucasian, about 35, barricaded inside with about 30 hostages," the captain said, without taking his eyes off the store. "He's got a sawed-off shotgun, we presume loaded, and a belt he claims is dynamite. We're assuming he's telling the truth." "Any demands?" Hopkins asked. "No, just keeps yelling about the end of the world. Threatens to detonate the belt if we get too close." "Only 30 hostages?" Eunice said. "I would have thought the store would be busier at this time on a Friday." "It was," Warner said. "Some of the smarter or luckier ones got out when he first pulled out the gun. Workers in the back of the store, salad bar, stockroom, butchers, they left through the back. Got some of the customers out with him. Plus, he let some of the kids go." "Any pattern to the people he kept?" "We don't know who he kept," Warner said, finally turning to face Eunice. "What's the Bureau's interest?" "It's your show," Eunice said. "We were called to investigate a possible terror connection." "Figures," Warner said. "Used to be lunatics were loners. Now we have to worry about whole networks of lunatics." Captain turned back to the store. "I don't know about Al-Qaeda, but he's got those people in there terrified." Captain Warner was interrupted by gunfire inside the store, two blasts from a shotgun. Eunice jumped, the noise hitting like cannon fire. As one, the law enforcement officers dropped to the ground and began searching for a target. A panel of glass in the front of the store spidered and collapsed outward to the sidewalk. "O Lord God, to whom vengeance belongeth! O God, to whom vengeance belongeth, show thyself!" A voice, high-pitched and strained, filtered through the hole in the glass, but Joe couldn't see its owner. Whoever he was, he didn't offer a target to the sharpshooters Captain Warner had deployed around the outside of the store. "Lift up thyself, thou judge of the earth! Render a reward to the proud! Lord, how long shall the wicked triumph?" Eunice, still flat on the asphalt between Warner and Mark Hopkins, peered underneath the county patrol car at the store. Still no sign of the man inside. The captain raised himself up, brushing the front of his uniform and muttering, "Lunatic. Freaking nuts." Eunice slowly got back to his feet. He recognized that last verse from a responsorial psalm he once heard at Mass. Again, the voice cried from inside the store, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth?" Hopkins snorted. "Crazy son of a... Joe, this guy maybe think he's another David Koresh?" Eunice just raised his eyebrows. Who could tell what this guy was thinking? "And I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke!" the voice cried, cracking again with fatigue, emotion, or perhaps the strain of keeping a finger hold on reality. "The sun shall be turned into darkness, and the moon into blood, before the great and terrible day of the Lord." Captain Warner began to turn to Eunice, a question on his lips, when they were suddenly slammed to the asphalt. And in an instant, the world around Joe Eunice erupted in blood and fire and pillars of smoke. There's a new day coming. There's a new day coming down. There's a new day coming. Oh, a new day coming. A new day coming. A new day coming. Oh,
analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.